I moved down to Austin. I was in high school 5 years because by my sophomore year, I was, you know, basically skipping school a lot to chase to chase the young ladies and things like that. There was a big culture in and around Dallas of knockdown, drag-out fights, and I never seemed to look for trouble, but I seemed to always run into it. So, in fact, that leads into a whole other area that really showed me the dark side of government. A, growing up outside Dallas in one of the wealthiest counties in Texas, I saw the incredible corruption of some of the rich kids. You know, my dad was just a dentist, sure, middle class, but nothing compared to people, some of which were the children of billionaires, who...
oil, too, right?
Well, just all sorts of stuff, sure. And a lot of these people, I guess because they were rebelling, there was so much occultism and just really bizarre things that I witnessed going on in and around Dallas. And I thought, wow, this is strange. But I read a lot of history, so I knew that in a way it was par for the course. But then it expanded out from there. I was never a drug user. I mean, I tried marijuana and things like that a few times. I didn't like it.
Did you inhale?
I'm sorry, George, go ahead.
Did you inhale?
No, yes, I did inhale.
Uh-huh. An honest man.
And I didn't like the way it made me feel. I mean, I probably smoked marijuana 20 times in my life. But the point is that I would be at parties, and drugs were everywhere, you know, in the 80s and early 90s. And I would see known police department people, known sheriff's deputies coming, in some cases pulling up in the parking lot in uniform, but in their own vehicle, selling different types of drugs.
Oh, my God.
And this was going on when I was about 12 or 13. I would go over to a friend's house that I played baseball with, and his brother, we thought was really cool. You know, he was a senior in high school, and the police would deliver him drugs. And then he, even when I was about 13, tried to recruit me to ride around on my moped and deliver drugs for him. But I said no, so then I was kind of kicked out of that group because I wasn't I wasn't cool anymore. But the point is, then I started shooting my mouth off whenever police would pull over and harass us for playing baseball in a vacant field, or when I'd be walking home at 9 o'clock at night with my friends, and the police would, you know, pull over and harass us and frisk us and stuff. I'd say, you know what, I've seen you 2 years ago. You delivered drugs.
Oh, you would say that to them?
Yes, so they started arresting me a few times, but I have no record even on my juvenile rap sheet because, you know, my dad always got lawyers and defeated it. And they would call me into the principal's office and kick the principal out and slam my head in the wall and say, listen, if you continue to talk about what you're talking about, we're going to put you in a jail cell and you're going to be found hanging by your neck. Or that's if you're lucky. Or we're going to set you up for something and put you in prison where you're going to be raped and be given, you know, AIDS and stuff like that. I mean, this is something I was told, but it didn't matter. Because then, through lawyers and other people that were contacted, my dad was basically told, get out of this area or we're going to do something to your son. And my dad's lawyer had a friend in a nearby town who'd actually been hung in his jail cell by police up there for having run-ins with him decades before, and he advised my dad to get me out of the area. So my dad sold his dental office and moved me to Austin. So that's why the whole family moved down here, because we were literally run out of the Dallas-Fort Worth area. But then that same year that we moved, they busted, this is on record, the sheriff in the county where I lived for flying narcotics into the airport, and the police department also got busted, and there was a big scandal. But the point is, from day one, I almost had like a Serpico type event happen to me from about 13 on, just because I was a pretty straight-laced kid. I got in fist fights and, you know, drank beer and stuff when I could get a hold of it at parties. But I was, you know, straight-laced, you know, short haircut, wearing plaid shirts, it looked like somebody out of the 50s, and I couldn't believe that the police were coming to our school giving us anti-drug speeches when I knew that they were drug dealers. And I figured out then that it was just an advertisement to teach the kids about drugs so they would want to try them.
Amazing. Of course, not all the cops.
No, not all the police. But, you know, when Serpico, the famous detective who I, by the way, interviewed, it's amazing. When Serpico, of course, Al Pacino plays his part, he said that all of the narcotics police in New York City were on the take. And, of course, they shot him in the face and tried to kill him.
That's right.
To shut him down. And so once corruption sets in, there are certainly a lot of departments that have good officers that are changing flat tires and helping old ladies and responding to domestic disputes. And it's a really rough job, and I'm not here to bash police. And years ago, at a primitive level, I would become threatened by the corruption and would just lash out. The system wants us to be against each other, police and citizen. And the police want to call us civilians, like it's a military occupation force, when they're citizens and civilians as well. We need to reach out to police. And at the same time, we've got to be honest that our police have been federalized, basically, and that most major cities, the police departments are fully aware and on the take and involved in the $500 billion a year narcotics trade in the U.S. I mean, take Fast and Furious, George. It's in the Sinaloa drug cartel court filings, Chicago Tribune, El Paso Times, just the last 6 months, that they have declared national security in those trials when the drug cartels bring up the fact that they were authorized to bring drugs into the United States. And just 2 weeks ago, they busted a leader of Sinaloa in Arizona and released him because they know they'll declare national security. So Fast and Furious is not just guns by the thousands being brought into Mexico. It is also drugs being brought into the United States. It goes back to Vietnam. That came out in Congress with the heroin inside the coffins. Now they're on the news admitting our troops are ordered to help grow and cultivate and guard the opium in Afghanistan. Anybody can just type in Fox News or BBC, U.S. troops guarding opium on YouTube. You'll get all the news clips. This is now hidden in plain view. It's a $500 billion industry. What came out earlier this year?
And it's tax-free.
It's tax-free. What came out this year that the biggest banks in America laundered $376 billion.
That's right.
In a two-year period of narcotics money, $376 billion. And that was just two of the six mega banks. Now, folks, the local crack house is not laundering and organizing and running the $376 bill. They've been caught. They've had CIA aircraft crash full of cocaine. That's Reuters. This is full on. 95% of the government is not aware of this. But I'll tell you, George, I've had family who was in the Army, and this is who they always try to recruit. And they love recruiting rednecks as well for whatever reason. There's this mystique that, you know, Texans and Tennesseans and people like that will get the job done. So that's who they come and recruit as one of their biggest groups, one of their biggest brigades of assassins. But I have had multiple people in my extended family who were recruited by U.S. government agencies, and one of them told my dad, I mean, and I probably shouldn't be getting into this, but the point is he was an Army officer recruited into the CIA, and they said, okay, now you're ready to go operational, and he's a pretty rough guy, and he wouldn't do what they said, and he told my dad they wanted me to deal drugs and kill people in Chicago.